Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, serving leaders, guardian. I'm sorry, I think that was supposed to be servant leader. Servant leader, let me start this again because it's important. Servant leader, guardian, mentor are my apt descriptors for Alan Maxwell. A truly ethical and moral leader, Alan is committed to providing his most valuable insights in his inspirational book in order to ease the journey for our next generation entering the workforce. Alan's lessons learned are a must-read for our youth and will provide a path for their success. Dr. Michael C. Bachman, Rear Admiral, United States Navy. And that book is called The System is Unforgiving, Play by the Rules and Win, by my guest today, Alan Maxwell. And that book is on my desk, by the way. Humble upbringings did not deter Alan Maxwell from an incredible and dynamic global journey in the Navy and later in the private sector as a defense contractor. While navigating complex dynamics in both worlds, he developed the rules of the system that would be critical to survive challenging circumstances such as, oh geez, this is where I kind of tear up a bit, serving in the Philippines amid political unrest, a near-death collision on the USS Kincaid, and a devious internal plan to usurp his leadership in Guantanamo Bay. As a businessman, he lost millions, saw the underbelly of politics, and steadfastly gained back his prosperity with a new insight on his allies. He came to resolutely know that while the system can be unforgiving, nothing is personal. And with the right rules of the system to follow, you will win. So Alan also volunteers as a CFO for a nonprofit organization. And this organization mentors students and ensures that they graduate from college as one of its focus points. Alan, welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I am honored to have you as my guest, and I want to thank you for sending me your book. It's a fascinating read.
Oh, good morning, Denise. Thank you. Thank you. What a great introduction. I'm not sure I can live up to that, but I'll do my best.
Are you kidding? I had a hard time figuring out what to say. There's so much. I started writing things. Ooh, that's important. No, you know, they need to read the book. Let's not give the whole book away. So,
there we go. You
have a fascinating life, and you know, just the idea that there are rules of the system to follow. That may be tough for some people like me. I don't follow rules very well. So when I first started reading this book, I opened it with a bit of like, yeah, this is probably really interesting. But I'm a rule breaker. I'm not really a rule follower. In some ways, you changed my mind, I have to tell you.
Well, actually, you are following rules. The rules are not to follow rules.
Oh, I knew it. I knew I liked you for a reason.
We all have rules. Before.
My rule is to basically do whatever the heck I want to do and to heck with everybody else, which is not always
a
good thing, but it's what I do. So listen, before I get, you know, too far in the weeds here and tell everybody that I'm an idiot, tell people what you want the audience to know about you, because I've got a lot of questions.
Well, it's real easy. I believe that, you know, we're given an opportunity to do good in life. We're given an opportunity to do great things in life. And so I just think that everyone should follow their passion, not be afraid to take chances, not be afraid to fail, not be afraid to accomplish your goals. Despite what people around you might think or say, that's not what's going to deter you from achieving where you want to be at in life. I think it's important that you set a stake in the ground and you head for it. And if you have a partner to go along with you that can help accelerate that path, that's even more important. So I think it's important.
It is. And, you know, you have gone through so much. I mean, you started out, well, let's have you tell that story. Because, again, it's a very fascinating story, and I don't want to get in the way of it.
Well, you know, I'm the youngest of seven children, and we grew up in the worst part of Philadelphia I think exists. I'm in North Philly. And, you know, that's a place where I've never taken my family up until 3 years ago to see the house that I grew up in. Mom and Dad didn't do too well together. Mom gave Dad an ultimatum and said, look, if you don't get yourself together, I'm taking the kids down on the farm in Georgia. We as kids had no idea what that really meant until we arrived in South Georgia in 1970. And I'm laughing because that was quite the cultural shock for a young kid to come from the inner city and then end up in the deep South with a whole different set of rules and laws and things. So for me, you know, and God bless the folks in the South, but that wasn't my cup of tea. So I wanted to do everything I can and everything I could to get out of there, and I did. I was so determined that I even tried to join the Job Corps to get out of there. And so
I'm laughing because I am in the South, so I know what you're talking about. I came from San Francisco to the South, so I get it.
Yeah, it's a different way of living. It's not a bad way of living.
It
it's
is.
Just different. And
I like
it wasn't
it.
For me.
It took
a
while.
No,
but for the first 2 years I was here, I kept saying, oh, geez, oh, geez. Well, I said other words. They weren't polite. But I finally got used to it.
If I was in a position in life to where I could just sit back and do nothing, and maybe that might be the place to just kind of vegetate until he called home the glory. But I need stress. I need excitement in my life, and that didn't have it there. So I need to get out of there. And unfortunately, I tried to get as far away as possible, and I ended up in California. So joined the Navy. The Navy brought me to California. But I joined the Navy with a chip on my shoulder. I joined the Navy not understanding that there were rules, and I had a young man tell me, kind of set me down when I was crying on his shoulders about how unfair things was. And this, he told me, he said, listen, buddy, he goes, there's a system. And he said, your blank blank isn't going to change it. And so I walked around wondering what in the world is he talking about with this system. But once I figured it out, it was like, okay, got it. So I changed my whole way of doing business, started doing right by the system. I was able to accelerate from a young, brand new E5 in the Navy to getting commissioned as an officer in 7 years, hitting every rank in between. When that happened, that was the first eye-opener to let me know that there is a system. If you follow it and you play by the rules, you will win. So I repeated that process once I retired, and I accelerated. I went into the federal government. I accelerated. And even now, owning my own business, we're doing outstanding. And it's just by understanding the rules of the game, not sitting back, blaming anybody, not being a victim, not saying, oh, I didn't have a chance, or so-and-so didn't like me, or whatever case. That's none of that. All that stuff is just noise in the air. But I believe that you just have to just drive to whatever it is your quest is, or where you want to achieve and what you want to be. So will there be failures? Absolutely. Will there be challenges? Absolutely. Will there be things that'll make you want to go and go in the corner and cry? Yeah, absolutely. But none of that stuff can stop you. So you just have to stay focused. And I think for me as well, having a good soulmate made all the difference in the world. You know, I started out with not a good soulmate, and that could have been a deterrent that could have stopped me from achieving my goals, but I quickly let go of that. And when I say quick, 18 months married and divorced.
That's quick.
But it was a good thing, you know, because I was fortunate not to have any children or anything like that, which could have been, you know, baggage that could have drug on for years. Well, you know, once you have children, that's a lifetime scenario, or not a nice lifetime situation. So I was able to get out of that. I was able to make corrections and found the love of my life, and been extremely happily married for the last 36 plus years.
And
so,
you have two daughters, I think.
Door. I have two outstanding daughters.
All right.
One's a lawyer. Mm-hmm. One's a lawyer, and one's doing extremely well in the military. She's in the State Department in the military, in the Navy, following after her dad's footsteps.
Congratulations.
Although she doesn't want to admit it, but anyway.
No, I was going to say she probably fought the whole way, but, you know, had to go where she needed to go. So you talk a lot about how is the system unforgiving, but you followed a system. So do you have time or the energy to kind of talk about the system that you followed while you were in the Navy? Because I think a lot of people are listening to this and going, well, you have to do what you're told. So that may
no,
be part of it, but is that actually true? Because there's too many people, I think, to tell them to walk along in lockstep. I don't think that works.
Well, it does work, and here's why it works. The military, absolutely, the military is the most awesome brainwashing process there is on this planet.
Okay.
and that's a true statement, and because think about this for a minute, right? In the military, they take people from all walks of life, from all, you know, wealth, poor,
right.
Don't matter what color your skin is, and they put them in a box, and they make them all come out the same. And that is impressive. And the ones that don't abide by what's in the box, they throw them out. Okay, so they keep only the ones that will abide by their rules. Now, that doesn't mean that you're some mindless drone and that you have to just walk down the path and go and run in front of a bullet or something like that. That's not what that means. That means that they have a very good process in place that they know if you follow their process, you could have a very successful career. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's actually a very good thing. The thing about the system being unforgiving is that because they have a process, that process is not personal. There's names on a piece of paper that's written in pencil. So if one name falls off, they just erases it and put another one. Nothing personal. I'm sorry you got shot. I'm sorry you missed the boat. I'm sorry, whatever. We'll send a letter home to mom, but the show must go on. And so that's what I mean by the system is unforgiving. And in life, so many people.
So it's a numbers thing. It's really a numbers thing, isn't it?
Well, it's a life thing. It's a reality thing. It's
okay.
I was just about to say, you know, people in jobs, they'll say, well, I didn't get the promotion because Bob didn't like me. Well, maybe Bob didn't choose you because in Bob's circle, his group was saying, we can't choose Alan today because we need to choose Fred. Okay, and so it has nothing to do with me, but Fred is the more the better fit for what they need to do, and so it wasn't personal. And so many people make decisions like that, you know, and say, well, you know, Bob didn't like me because I'm dating his daughter. Well, no, Bob had a responsibility to the organization that he had to do. It wasn't about you, and he had to make a decision. And that's the way it is in life. So you can't sit around and feel bad that if you didn't get that promotion or you didn't. Well, if you got looked over for whatever opportunity it was, maybe it wasn't your time. Maybe you didn't have all the right stuff. Maybe, you know, so you have to accept the fact that, listen, you have to, I say this again, you have to kind of set your course and not let these things deter you because you're going to fail. That's part of it. You're going to fail. You're going to have bad times. You're going to have situations that's going to, because that's what we call life. I don't know anyone that has a perfect family or has a perfect life. And if someone tells me that, I'm going to see a perfect liar in front of me.
Exactly.
I don't think that's true. Yeah.
Or even a perfect day. I mean, we have great days. We have good days. Yeah. You know what I've noticed, Alan? People say, I'm having a bad day. No, you're not. You might be having a bad 5 minutes or a bad crummy hour, but you're not having a bad day. If you started out that morning and it was bad from start to finish, chances are you didn't survive that day. So quit whining.
Exactly. And you just said something very important. You'll never hear me say anything like that. And here's why. I'm not going to predict my outcome. So if a challenge happened, well, it was a challenge happened. When it's over, it's over. We're going to keep moving. We're not going to sit there and go, I had a bad day. And so therefore, I'm going to make your day bad. I'm going to make everything around me bad, and I'm just going to stay stuck in that rut. Oh, no. No. And I don't like to be around people like that either. I try to stay away from the Debbie Downers or the poor, woe it's me, because in some cases, you cannot talk them out of it. They're convinced that that's just the way it is, and you look at them and say, no, it's not true. You know, you, like you said, it's only that 5 minutes or that 10 minutes, and get over it and keep on moving, because, one, nobody really cares that you're having a bad
day. I know.
They really don't.
I know. And in the end, at the end of the day, if you still care, you need to sit with yourself for a while and have a big talk with your attitude. It's, you know, when you and I got in my virtual green room, you're saying, how are you? My response is always, I'm great. because there's no point in complaining. There's no point. And listen, we all have those moments like, well, crud, what was that? Then you're over it 5 minutes later. Then you're going to have another, well, okay, that's more than an oh crud. That's an oh bad word. You're going to stomp on the fire, do whatever you have to do, and then move on. And do you know what I do? And I think people like you and me do. At the end of the day, when we look at all the things that we had happen, that we did, that we survived, there's so many learning points there. There's so many things that we can go, huh, what did I learn from this? Well, darn, that's pretty darn good. That's the way I look at it.
That's exactly where I looked at it. I had a situation that I think I wrote about in my book where a guy, you know, screwed me over like $67 million. And
yeah,
to this day, I will never tell this person thank you, you know, because I want to say thank you because of your bad acting took me through a lesson that was invaluable. You know, I've learned so much from that experience. What did I learn? I learned what somebody like them looked like. So when I see that again, I divert and get out of the way and don't go down that path again. So again, you definitely learn from your mistakes. In the Navy, we call that lessons learned. So for sure.
How long were you in the Navy?
22 years.
That's what I thought. And apparently, I mean, you took away a lot of really excellent things from it. And like we're talking, you had some bad things happen from it. But the rules that you talk about, what are some of your personal rules? I watch very little TV, very little, and I haven't had cable in 10 years. But one of the shows I did watch was NCIS. I mean, who doesn't watch that until it got really bad? But, you know, Mark Harmon Gibbs, I think he always had his rules. Do you have your rules?
I do. And my number one rule was, you know, seek and identify and appreciate your mentor. Okay, and I say they've been putting your life, you know, to push you to greatness. But what I really mean by that is we may be very smart and very intelligent. We may know a lot, but there's someone out there that knows just a little bit more or have done it just a little bit better. So it's always good to have a solid sounding block, not a horse holder, but a sounding block that you can go to, bounce your ideas off of, and get an unbiased perspective. I think that's so important. So many people miss that. So many people try to solve things on their own. And the worst thing you could ever do is sit in a room by yourself and come up with a solution. That is horrible, because I promise you, disaster is waiting around the corner when you step out of that room, because you're not going to look at all facts. You're not going to look at it from outside perspective. You're going to just look at it from your own internal intellect, and then that's the decision you're going to make, which is most cases will be bad.
Oh, not only that, but the internal dialogue you have with yourself. We've all done this. We know we've got an uncomfortable conversation as it's going to happen, and we script it in our heads, and we know exactly what we're going to say. We know exactly what the other person's going to say. It never works out that way. So stop doing that.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think another one of my main rules, and I had to learn this the hard way, was it's not important to always win. Let others win. And even running this corporation, I look at some of my employees, and I see they made a bad decision. I had poor judgment. And I don't chastise them. I probably ask them if they learned something. If it's something that's not going to hurt the company or hurt anything like that, it's okay to let some people feel that they're right. And why that is that it helps build self-esteem in them. It helps them to know that, okay, I thought I was right, and I went down this path thinking I was right, later to find out that I was wrong, but at least I had a chance to go down it. If you shut them down before they even get out of the gate, they'll never take that experience.
And they're also not going to try again. I mean, they're going to, after a while, just say, yeah, he's just going to yell at me. She's just going to fire me. I'm just going to clock in, clock out, go home.
Exactly. That's exactly what you get. And so sometimes it's good. If it's not going to hurt anything, let them win. Let them have it. Let them have that win. I think that's important. And never be too demanding. You know, I've been through a lot in my life, and I've seen a lot in my life. But I can't lay that expectation on everybody. I can't sit there and say, well, because I did this, you should do that. No. If you haven't been through half the things I've been through, or if you don't have the experience or education, how would you know? So for me to be demanding, it's just futile. I mean, it's just not going to do anything. And I think the cause of so many divorces is because people get married, and all of a sudden they wake up and realize that the person of their dreams isn't the person of their dreams. They have flaws. And now they're trying to demand that they be the person of their dreams. Well, guess what? It's not going to work. They weren't that person when you married them. You just didn't see it.
No.
And then they're not that person now.
And
nor
you're not
can they be
the person
that person
they thought they were getting. So now you've got a big old mess in the house.
Exactly.
It's
exactly.
Difficult. And, honestly, marriage to me is difficult anyway. But men and women are different species. Are we really supposed to get along? I mean, honestly, are we? I don't even know.
But that's very true. That's a very good statement, and I agree with you. We're not supposed to get along. We're supposed to cohabitate and kind of work together, but we think differently, and we act differently. And that's a good point. Back to my wife and I are so different, but that's what makes us work. I don't try to put her in a situation that I am good at, because she would fail miserably, nor would she put me in a situation that she's good at, because I would fail miserably. So now that we understand that, I don't go there, she doesn't come here, but we hang out in our common areas. Yeah, I think that's I think that's important.
That's a good way to put it. I've been there. I've tried it. I'm never doing it again. I'm one of those people. It's okay, if it works for you, that's terrific, but don't even try to get me to go out on a date. Just don't. I'm not going to go there.
Right.
Done. Mm-hmm. But, some people, when we're done, we're really done. So let's talk about the rules. Well, I wanted to go back a bit because we were talking about taking things personally. And I've heard you say that and you've said it a bit here, that taking things personally is a waste of time. Let's expand on that just a bit, because I agree with you. For the longest kind of time, I lived in my right brain, very messy. I did things on an emotional basis, very messy. And then I got myself smacked pretty hard on an emotional basis. It was hard. It was one of the hardest things that I've gone through. And I moved, Alan, I moved out of my right brain. I opened up my left brain. I opened it up and, it's bright. There's no cobwebs in there. There's no junk in there. And I moved into my left brain deliberately. So now I kind of straddle both. But it took me a while to say, you cannot take things personally. It's ridiculous. So what do you say about how ridiculous it is?
Well, like the illustration I gave earlier about Bob, I'm running this company. If I go to a meeting and the meeting has, this is an example, I have a meeting that has something to do with moving the company forward, and I need someone that's really good at writing. And so I look across my spectrum, my subordinates, and I look at them and I say, well, Johnny's a better writer. Well, Jill might think she's a written scholar. And again, she's going to look and say, well, I picked this other person because I don't like her. And in reality, she had nothing to do with the equation, never came into focus, never even was a part of the thought, because she was automatically, just moved aside because she didn't fit the billet. Had nothing to do with her. It had something to do with getting what the desire was to achieve, whatever goal was. And you mentioned emotional. One of the things that drives me absolutely crazy is I have family that lives in Georgia. And I look at some of the decisions, and not just them, but some of the folks I graduated high school with, and they'll be walking into disaster. And you look and say, do you realize it's disaster in front of you? And they're like, yeah, I know, but, I don't want to change because it might hurt, Sally's feelings. And I'm like, oh, my God. And they go and do it, and it turns out disastrous. And they're like, well, that's the way it was meant to be. You're like, oh, my God.
No, emphatically, no. It was not. It's what you made.
That's what you made. Exactly. And that's what drives me nuts when I see people just so, no, you can't take things personal. It happens. The way it happens, because of the factors that's associated with making whatever decision or whatever choice, that's what it is. wasn't about you. Exactly. And if you walk through life thinking it's about you, it's terrible.
Exactly. You know? Everything that we do, you know, the door that we open to go outside, whatever it is that we're doing, was a series of decisions that got us to that door. Why don't people understand that?
Oh, you just said something that really, really, my wife just beats this in my head, and I love it. She says, be careful of the doors you open.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't know how someone's going to come through that door, nor can you control how they come through that door.
And she's right.
I didn't think about that. Absolutely. Well, and so many people don't understand that.
I know. And I take that actually physically to the physical plane. Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned to you, and my audience knows this, I'm a highly committed introvert. I'm not shy. I'm just an introvert. I like to be alone. There's a sign on half of my door is glass, the front door. And there's a sign on that door that I refresh periodically. I reprint it and I put it out there. It's been there for 15 years. And it says, and I've got it on my desk because I'm reprinting, please do not ring the doorbell or knock on the door if we do not expect you or you have not been invited. And I'm dead serious about it. I don't understand why you would open the door to a stranger. I don't understand it. You don't know who's on the other side of that door. And these days, that's just darn stupid to open the door to anybody unless you know who they are.
Well, not only that, I'll give you another scenario. I used to, my daughter played basketball, and I had an apparel business, and I was trying to, help the booster club out selling apparel. So I go to a meeting one night, and the board members just berate the heck out of me, and they told me I was trying to corner the market. Now, mind you, I was doing all this for them. I wasn't taking anything. I was giving everything to them. I took no profits, everything I sold, I gave to them. But it was a bunch of haters. And so I sit there, and I took the abuse, and I didn't say anything. And so I said, okay, fine. So then all of a sudden they put it in the minutes, and they put it in the minutes really ugly. And I went back to them and said, okay, now that you made this an official document, now I have to respond in kind. And, oh, my God, I blew them out of the water in terms of how ineffective, how inept, how uneducated, how they didn't follow Robert Rules of Order, I just laid it out. I just gut them open. Their husbands called me on a Sunday, and they said, well, we didn't appreciate you talking to our wives that way. I went, wait a minute. Wait, buddy. I sat in the audience.
You were talking to their wives. You were talking to board members.
Thank you
Isn't
very
that
much.
Different? There's a big difference there.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. Yes. And so I said to him, I said, let me ask you a question. I said, if you and I were passing each other on the street and you brush my shoulder, if I turn around and took out my gun and shot you, would that be excessive? He said, man, yeah, that's extremely, that's crazy. I said, but no, buddy, that's the door you open. You have no idea what's going on in the head of the other person. So be careful of the doors you open. You can't control that. You can't control what's going on with someone else. So know the doors or, the situations that you open yourself to. You have to be careful. If you don't want to get in a bunch of mess, stay out of messy places.
Exactly. And, I know this wasn't on my list of things that I wanted to talk to you about, but I think it's important because we do have to look at people. I don't know about you. I don't necessarily listen to people. I watch them. Because people can say one thing and they're going to do something completely different. I'm on the phone all the time talking with people, and I love my podcast, but I also watch what my guests are doing, which is how they become my guests. You can't just say, hey, Denise, can I come on your show? The answer is probably going to be no. I have to know who you are, what you're doing, and how I can admire you and share you with a very large audience. So what you do, I think, is often far more important than what you say or what you heard somebody else say, which is basically what happened to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a saying for that, right? The audio must fit the video.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So what I have to ask, what happened with this deal? Did you finally just say, okay, ladies, boys, girls, I'm out of here? I would have been gone 10 minutes earlier.
That's exactly what I did, but it was just an illustration of letting them know that, wait a minute, you opened up a door, you started something, you didn't like the way it finished, But because of that, now you just lost me and the proceeds that was going to your organization. And guess what? Down the road, two of those people were found to have been embezzling funds from the organization. They were bad. They were bad. And I knew they were bad. They didn't understand that the moment they took money from parents, that they were now running a business. They told me, no, it wasn't a business. No, no. I said, okay. All right. Okay. All right. You guys go keep doing what you're doing. Well, they got removed from the school. They were put on the bad list. They were found guilty of embezzling money. They were doing all kind of bad stuff.
So this is why you go by the rules. You know, every organization, every group of people, whether you're a group of two people or a group of thousands, you're right. There are rules. Now, me, I'm like, well, I don't want to do that. You can't make me do that. And then I go, I will often sit with myself because I have to. I'm logical. I need to be logical about things. Think, why is this rule in place? Okay, I can see part of it. What's the rest of it I'm not understanding? I'll spend time trying to unravel a rule just to see if I can break the darn thing because I'm a little bloody-minded.
Well, and I think, though, when I talk in rules, I'm talking about your character rules. So, for example, I will not compromise my integrity for no one, period. I am not going to lie, cheat, or steal for no one. So if you don't want to get no, don't ask me. When I was in the federal government, some things happened, and they wanted me to do some things, and I went, I'm not going to have my fingerprints on this decision. It's not a good decision. It's not ethical. It's not above board. Thank you very much. I'm not going to play. And I've received bad evaluations then, and I was derelict in my duties because I didn't conform. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry. You can say what you want to say about me, but I know I could sleep at night knowing that I didn't do what you wanted me to do.
Exactly.
So I think, and everyone has to set their own set of rules. I mean, I believe that we have standards, and I'm not going to go below my standards. And that's not being pompous, or that's not being arrogant. That's just saying, I'm not going to lie, cheat, and steal for you. So, sorry.
Well, if it feels wrong, there's a reason why it feels wrong. So when you're talking about the rules, you're suggesting that the rules that we play are ethical and moral, possibly spiritual. They are who you are. They who you are at your core.
Exactly. That's exactly who they are. Yep. Just like you said, you'll never date whoever. That's your rule. That's the fact that you don't follow others' rules. That's your rules. That's who you are. You know, that's what it's all about. Sure.
And it's so funny. I've got friends and clients who are like, okay, you ready to date now? Mother of God, no. Stop it. No.
It's funny. My wife and I had that discussion this weekend about that. I said, if something were to happen to you, you could rest assured that there won't be someone else. There will not be someone else. I promise you, you know, there won't be anyone else because, one, I wouldn't want to go through that with someone else. And what we've established for all these years would never be the same. So I wouldn't want to go through life trying to compare. Yeah, I think that would be just a waste of time. Nor would I disrespect all the years that we spent together. So it's kind of one of these things where, you know, we've had happy times and I'll have continued happy times. I would focus on my children and live vicariously through their lives, I guess, you know, or be one spoiled guy and buy a whole bunch of stuff that I enjoy and travel and do all sorts of cool stuff. With no hindrance.
There you go. But see, you've had a happy marriage. I never did. So, but that's, you know, personal and neither here nor there. But it was me. You know, I'll be very frank with you. I'm a difficult person to live with. I live alone and I get mad at me. So it's like, you know,
but that's okay, though. But that's perfectly okay. But the fact that you know that, that's what's beautiful. You know, that's what's
I'll
beautiful.
Tell.
You're not pretending.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
No. Mm-hmm. I will tell everybody, listen, I don't play by the rules. I run with scissors. You know, I just don't really, I need to be alone. I'm happiest when I was telling this with my niece yesterday. We were talking and we were visiting because they had a big Halloween thing in California over there. And she was saying, you know, I think that once my child is raised and everything is done, I think I'm done. I want to be off by myself.
Right.
So, and some people are. I'm an introvert. Yeah, I'm an introvert by need. And it took me the longest kind of time to figure out that I wasn't snotty or a bitchy or a loner. I'm an introvert. And I really like being alone. So there it is. But I was telling her, I said, look, I've been divorced for 10 years and it is honest to goodness, I kid you not, the happiest 10 years of my life.
I can believe it. And you know,
why would I mess with that?
And what makes my situation works real well, my wife is an introvert and I'm an extrovert to a degree. But she could sit in a closet with a puzzle, and she is happy as a clam. Guess what I do? Yeah, and what I do, I let her sit in the closet. I let her sit in the closet with her puzzle, and I don't mess with her. I'll go out and do things that I need to do, you know, or things that
excite
me. I don't force her. I don't try to force it into my world. She's happy in her world. I'm happy that she's in her world. I'm happy in my world. But we have, like I say, we have our common areas that we hang out together.
Mm-hmm. And
I think that's important,
perfect.
Respecting each other. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Well, it's out of respect.
So this goes to part of the rules that you play by, too. You say there are 15, and I'm guessing that, you know, the way you treat your wife and your family with respect and with care for their needs and their desires is one of those 15, but do you mind kind of enumerating them for me?
So you mean just walking through all 15 of us?
Yeah, I think we've got time.
Sure. Okay, so rule number one is seek, identify, and appreciate your mentors. As I kind of mentioned, they're there for a reason. They're the help you get to graces if that's your desire. Stay focused on the objectives and continuously evaluate your game plan. And that really means is you can't rest on your laurels. I mean, I was a great military officer, but guess what? That's who I was. I had to get out and become a whole new person once that life was over. So I can't sit back and try to live in the past. Constantly survey the environment to ensure that every day you see where you're at. And that, to me, is critical. Again, you may have been someone fantastic yesterday, and I love what you're saying. The last 10 years of life were the happiest because you surveyed it, you looked, and you said, here's where I belong. Here's what makes
exactly.
me happy.
Yep.
That's beautiful, you know. Mm-hmm. Never become pompous or arrogant. Adversity
oh,
is not
shoot.
The enemy.
You just lost
Stay
me.
Stay humble. Well, you know,
darn it.
But being arrogant and pompous is a very big turnoff. I mean, I don't need to walk around. I know who I am. I don't need to say I'm the CEO and I drive this and I live there. That's ridiculous. I mean, it's like, hey, I'm Alan. And you see what you get. And that's it. You know, now you could put me in whatever box you want me to be put in. Oh, he's a millionaire and he's just, that's fine. Whatever you want to say. But you're speculating on what you think. And I'm dealing with what I know. So I'm just not going to sit and put myself on Front Street. It's not important to always win. Let others win. Own your mistakes, but don't take the fall for others. Growing up in Philly.
Yeah, let's
growing
talk
up in
about
Philly,
that.
We had a code of you don't ever rat. You never rat on somebody. You never, no matter how, what, where. Well, I'm sorry, but if I didn't do something, I am not going to go to jail for you. It's not going to happen. I'm not going to do something or watch you do something or see you make mistakes and then I'm going to accept the faults. No thanks. You made the mistakes. You did it. You own it. It's yours. I'm not going to cover for you. Not going to happen. Never be too demanding. Again, sometimes you don't know someone has to offer. The pastor of my church always says something that resonates with me. He says, just all I ask for is for you to do your best. Well, if you're giving me your best and that's all you got, that's all you got. So I can't force something out of you that you don't have. And in that area, you know, I have family members that expect their wives to do certain things. And I always come back to them and say, well, where did she learn that from? How can you expect her to know something if she haven't been taught that or she haven't been educated on that? So, you know, you can't demand something from somebody that they don't have it. Be flexible to change, but stand your grounds ethically. Again, life is evolutionary. The only thing that's constant is change. So just because you are an introvert and just because you don't like people, that doesn't mean you have to hate people. That just means, you know, hey, you are who you are. But if things change where you have to go and deal with other people, okay, that doesn't mean you don't have to not be an introvert. That just means you have to deal with other people. And you'll figure out how to put them in their little box that they need to be in.
I actually like people, but I'm only good with them for 59 and three quarter minutes. After that, I'm
with you.
I'm with you. I like people just fine. But after a while, I think, stop talking. Nobody talk.
You would love the house that my wife and I bought, because I think you would think that we're talking about introverts, but it's so very private, and you can't get to me unless you go through a couple of gates and a whole bunch of stuff. So, like you say, don't show up. You're not going to show up on my door, you know, without notice.
See, I live in the deep south, and honest to goodness, I want to move to an island in Maine. I've never been to Maine. I want to live on an island, and I'm going to do it one day. You watch me. It'll happen.
It's so funny you say that, because that's what I say all the time. So I'm going to buy an island. I'm only going to invite my friends to come on it. That's it. The rest of the world, have a nice life.
You have to take the ferry, and I probably won't answer the door. So, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is. That's right. You know, and then I think this other one is very important. It says stay close to your circle, which should be extremely small. One
I agree.
Or two. Yes, because I know, especially during my Navy days, and a lot of the things that you got into in a situation, you know, there's some things you just can't share with other people. You just can't. And so you have to really trust your inner circle. You have to trust. When you confide in somebody, or if you tell somebody, you have to really trust them. And you can't trust people, because in nature, people like to talk, and they like to talk about someone else. So I don't want to be the top of their conversation. So my circle of friends, the people that I call my best friends, I can count them all on my hands, and they're all over the United States. And if I call one of them today, before I could ask the question, the answer is yes. When do I need it? When do you need it? How soon do I need to get it to you? Those are my friends. And they know if they ever call me, that's the way it's going to be. But we don't talk every day. We may not talk for 5 or 6 months. But whenever we do talk, it's as if time hasn't passed. So,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And I take that a step further. I mean, you just described my circle of family and friends. But there are a handful and a half now of people who have my cell phone number. It's unlisted. I don't give it out.
Right.
If you have it, you've passed the friend test. Seriously. I just don't give it out.
And when I call you my friend, I mean that. You're my friend. So I don't throw that around loosely. You know. And be discerning about who you trust with your ambitions. Oh, my God, I can't tell you how many times I've seen people's lives get destroyed because they're out there telling what their intentions are. And, you know, there's haters out there. Haters will hate. Unfortunate, but haters will hate. Some people live to just bother others. And if they see that you're doing well, they're going to do something to disrupt it. And so to prevent that, keep your ambitions to yourself and just go out and execute the plan. Let them know after you've accomplished what you've accomplished, but not before. And here's our favorite. Don't take anything personal, because, again, it is a waste of time. And I used to tell my brother this all the time. Nobody cares about you, buddy. And I told him, this is not because they don't care. It's because they have their own problems to deal with. How can they deal with theirs and yours? So get out there and do your thing. And make decisions for yourself, and don't worry about someone thinks, and don't worry about all that other nonsense. You know, just not take it personal. Don't let haters distract you from your objectives. Haters are haters. I don't know what else to say about that. There's some people that are genuine, and they're happy for your successes, or empathetic of your challenges, or concerning of your choices and all that. That's fine. But haters will hate, and they could take you down a path that leads to nowhere. But what happens at the end of the road is you just wasted a lot of time and energy and everything else for nothing. So, you know, don't let them distract you. Cut ties quickly if someone is not aligned with your vision. Oh, I can't tell you how many mistakes I've made by holding on to people that I probably should have cut. A perfect example, when I first started my company, I hired this guy to help me in my finances. This guy was mediocre, but I figured I could build him and grow, but he was always mediocre. He was never going to be anything other than mediocre. And so when it got to the point to where I was forced to fire him, not because I wanted to, despite everything everyone told me, I kept him on way too long. I ended up firing him, and he turned around and sued me. And he sued me. He went and found, he went and found an ambulance chaser. He didn't have anything to any grounds to sue me on, but it took me down that whole legal road, you know, with the battles back and forth. So no, he didn't get money, but he made me spend a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So had I cut ties earlier,
and attention to him, you had to give him a lot of your attention.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and that took me away from the things I should have been doing. So that's why you cut ties quick, because you could spend a lot of valuable time on things that are just useless and has no value whatsoever. And I had to learn also about always have rainy day money. What does that mean? It's different for everyone, but my kids growing up, when they started school, we put, you know, money in their pockets. This is your emergency money. You need to have, and we told our children this as they was growing up, and to this day they all keep, my wife and all, it's like, you need to have enough money to get you out of a situation. And what I mean by that is bus fare, a plane ticket, or whatever. So if you're going to go on a trip, make sure you're not relying on someone to get you back. Make sure that you have that covered. And then also, it's always good to have something available when situations arise. You just never know. You know, and it doesn't have to be a large sum of money. It just needs to be something that you can grab hold to that will get you through the situation. Not necessarily saving money for retirement, because that day may never come to, you know, to the point that you like, but always have money available when situations come up is what that really means. And I say my last rule, and I didn't put it last because it's least important, but I just wanted to make sure that I didn't forget it. And in marriage, effective communications is paramount. And I told my wife, after going through what I went through my first situation, when I met her, two things that I said to her. I said, one, I'm not going to marry you to divorce you. Okay, so what that meant was, if you're going to sign on a dotted line, that means you're in for the long haul, good, bad, you know, all the things that the marriage vows said. I took that to heart. And then the other thing is, I said, we're going to communicate, and you have to agree that I want you to say what's on your mind, no matter how it comes out, no matter how it's said, no matter at what point you say it, but I don't want you holding things in. Bring it out. And I said, I were to come home, and this is going to sound bad, but if I were to come home and said, I hate you, you're blankety, blankety, blank, I said, don't get upset about, which I would never say that, but I'm saying, don't get upset of what I said. You should be understanding or ask the question, why did I say that? What drove me to that point to have the wants to say bad things to you? But if we're communicating, if I'm telling you how I'm feeling, and I'm not saying the cry on the shoulders and all that business, I'm saying just, I need to understand who you are. You need to understand who I am. If I make a decision and it's not the decision that you had expected, let me explain why I made my decision. And so now you can understand. And if I made the wrong decision, it wasn't intentional. It was, I made a decision based on information I had, or, you know, my abilities to make that decision. If it was something beyond or I didn't know or didn't see, well, how could I make a better decision? But don't hold me to that, because I did the best I could with what I had. And it's, you know, the same as for her. You know, it's that when she comes and she does something that's not, you know, suited for what I, how I would have handled it, I'll go, okay, well, you know what, let's talk about it. And, okay, here's why you did X, Y, and Z. Yes. Did you see the error in your ways? No. Got it. I get it.
You asked that question. Yeah. How many times did you get hit with a frying pan? I have to know.
Well, luckily she's not a violent person. There's been a lot of quiet days. We believe this, you know, check this. Since we've been together, we have never had an argument. Not one. Never had an argument. Never. We've had a lot of disagreements. There's been some quiet times in the house, but there's never been an argument. And why we had quiet times is because when you get to the point where you know now the ugly stuff may come out, walk away.
Back
don't
it up.
Stand there in the don't stand there and stay in the ugly mess, because then that's when things are said. And when things are said, you can't unring the bell.
Nope, you're stuck with that. And everybody says, we apologize. It's okay. It's not okay. That burrows into your soul and it stays there.
That's right. And I don't argue with anyone. I mean, I don't argue with my wife. I don't argue with anyone. When someone likes to argue, I'm like, okay, I'm done. The fact that you're that type of person tells me I don't need to be around you. So that tells me that one thing I've learned, and I learned this back in my martial art days, if you're talking, you're not thinking.
You're not listening. Exactly.
You're not listening.
And if you've accelerated it to yelling, your brain is mush. Don't even bother.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever is coming out of your mouth is garbage, and you're going to pay for it for a very long time. Just stop talking.
I was educated here probably about 6-8 months ago. Someone said that there's two types of listeners. There's people that listen to hear, people that listen to respond. And I'm sure you've probably spoken with people that listens to respond, because they really aren't listening. They're just a hammer cocked and just waiting to just jump on anything you say. And they try to get in and finish a sentence for you, or they try to tell you what you're going to say. They're not listening to you. They've already made their predetermined decision, their thoughts. And so, again, when I'm around those type people, I'm like, thank you, but have a nice day. Because nothing that I say, you're going to hear.
Car keys. So. My car keys are out. I'm out of there. But
something
you said a little bit ago about one of the 15 rules, and I kind of chuckled a little bit. You're talking about the money. I always have, that little rainy day fund, whatever you want to call it. My grandmother, she passed some years ago. She always. And we found this after she was deceased, but she always carried a folded up $50 bill pinned to her bra. And that $50 bill had probably been attached to her forever, because it was old. It was an old bill. But she never, it was there. She had that peace of mind that she had that $50 on her.
It's funny you mention that, because my wife carries a $50 bill around with her the same way. So this day, she has that crumpled up $50 bill somewhere on her, somewhere around her.
I don't even
never
know.
Never leaves home without it.
Yeah, I'm sure one of my cousins has, and I hope it never got spent. I hope it became, part of their momentum.
Sure.
I don't know. I wouldn't ask. It wasn't my business, but I remember seeing that. I said, Grandma, why do you care that? She said, honey, you just never know. And that's all she was
never
saying.
Know.
Just never know.
I got one of the best deals of my life because I missed one of the best deals of my life because of that. In the military, there's some young sailors ran into hard times, and they go, hey, I want to sell X or something very valuable for next to nothing. And the first time it happened to me, I didn't have the money. And I just cried. I went, oh, my God, I missed up a grip. From that day forward, I went, I will make sure I always have a couple bucks handy, because those deals will come by. And I bought a 35-millimeter camera back in the day for next to nothing, because this kid was hard up for money, and he just wanted to get some money. He sold me this camera. It was worth a lot, and he sold it to me for next to nothing. And I just happened to have the right amount of change right close by. And I believe it or not, I still have that camera today.
And you helped him. So it's a twofold process there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
Interesting.
For sure. It was.
I don't own a $50 bill. I don't think I've seen one since I saw that one with my grandma. But I do have money just kind of, poked away. Just hidden away in case I need it. I mean, I think it's just the smartest thing to do. And my best friend is that way. She's single. I'm single. We help each other a lot. We, hang out with each other's families. And honestly,
you guys must be dangerous together.
Yeah.
I just had to say that.
Yeah. But we're fun. We're very fun people.
No, I know. I'm saying that in a very fun way, too. I'm saying you guys must be dangerous. So anyway, that's good. In a good way. Yeah.
But she knows where I've hidden my little hidden statues are. I know where hers are in case anything happens.
I've
got the key. I go in and I grab whatever is important. I bring it to her if she needs it, or hide mm-hmm. it if it needs to be hidden. You know, you do, and that goes back to that trust factor that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Keep your friends mm-hmm. close. Make sure you mm-hmm. trust them. And, you know, that if you tell them anything that nobody else in the world needs to know about, that's as far as it goes. Mm-hmm. Those are the friends that you love forever.
That's right. And that's unconditional love there.
Yes.
Unconditional love. Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I had that conversation with my daughters is that, you know, friendship is unconditional. If someone has to try to work hard at being your friend, walk away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just walk away.
If it's not natural,
if it's not just, you know, you guys have, you know, I call them touch points. If you don't have similar touch points, walk away. And I tell you, I say that, but I find my life so much more peaceful when I'm around like-minded, you know, or people that at least we can converse. I just can't handle being around ignorant people. I just can't handle being around the people that walk around and know it all. I just can't handle it. So I just best stay away from it.
And now you know about my divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to go down that road. It's getting close to the anniversary, I guess, is why it's on my mind. Okay, so let's mm-hmm. move a little bit. You talk about saying, oh, we've only got 3 more minutes. Man, this has been fascinating. You say that with success comes more success, and I believe you. But you also, you know, add to that once you learn how to navigate life systems. So being an author is your 4th career. So let's talk about that, because this book, I'm telling you, we had our 5th hurricane recently, but the 4th hurricane, Delta, was the one where I had no power for three days, which didn't bother me because I have a stack of books in my office. You know, I've got your book. All of the books in my office were sent to me by guests of this podcast. So I grabbed a couple of stacks of books, a flashlight, mm-hmm. whatever I needed, and I read and I scribbled notes, and I had, you know, you've got little yellow stickies here all over your book. Let's talk about this. What caused you to become an author?
Life. The people that knew me and some of the people that I shared some of my challenges with and that went through things with me, it's like, Alan, you're an amazing person. You ought to write a book. People need to know your process, your thoughts, how you operate. That's critical. And I fought that for a while. I mean, because one, writing a book is not an easy task. And it took me a long time to even come to the idea of writing a book. And I got to say, when I met Kim O'Hara, I got to give her props because it was she that really, really thrust me into this. I talked to other people and they just didn't do it. But it was just something about her. It was how she and I communicated. And I promise you that we'll be friends for life just based on her being an incredible coach and mentor. And I call her a drill sergeant, but she stayed on me. And I'm a person that really needs that. You know, I need discipline or I need structure, not discipline. I need structure. I'm very disciplined. I need structure. If you lay it out 1 through 10, I'm there. If you tell me 1, 20, 14, 11, then I'm lost. My mind doesn't work that way. I have a very analytical mind, and it has to be, everything has to fit properly for me to see it. so that's that was a catalyst. And then once I started writing the book, then it all started coming out. Then it all started feeling natural. I felt like, oh, I want to make sure you understand this. I want to make sure you see this. I want to talk about that. And so I like the way I structured the book, and I think the whole intent, or my intent was, not to have a specific demographics. I think my book will resonate with anyone. I had a 17-year-old beta reader read it, and you should see in the comments that this young lady wrote. And I went, bam.
Oh, good.
Success. I think I hit it right. And I've had elderlies read it. But yeah, everyone seemed to get what I intended for them to get out of the book. So.
Well, it's a fascinating book. And listen, we're no longer streaming But we're still recording. So do you have a few minutes? Yeah. Can you stay with me a bit longer?
Absolutely. Sure.
Okay, good.
I can sit all day long.
So. I'll make you do that. But, I mean, I told you I had questions. One of the things that we didn't have an opportunity to talk about, and it's in the book, you had a near-death mm-hmm. experience. What happened?
Oh, my God. So we were in the Straits of Malacca. It was November 12, 1989 at 5:18 in the morning. I was and I don't know how much you know about the Navy, but I was the conning officer, meaning the second one in charge. The way Navy ships operate, you have what they call the officer to deck, and you have the junior officer to deck. The officer to deck is the one that has, like, the situational awareness, big picture. The junior officer to deck is the guy driving the ship, making sure the crew is doing everything they're supposed to do and all that sort of stuff. Well, we briefed going into the strait the night before. When I came on watch that morning, it was just a lot of ships, a lot of things going on. There were three ships that I was watching. That is what we call a CBDA, constant bearing decreasing range, CBDR. And so I saw these three ships, and we're on a collision course. And I mentioned that, and the officer of deck, the combat officer, and the quartermasters were all saying, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about, and they ignored me. And so I'm watching this, and so now it gets to a point where it's in the extremis, but now this ship is coming up on us, they're blowing their horns, and now I'm screaming and yelling. And they finally listen, and he says, do a 10-degree turn, but I did a full turn. I was no longer listening to him anymore. So the ship hits us in the side, and hits into a space that I was responsible for, which is a torpedo magazine. I know how much explosives that were in that magazine. When the executive officer got on the bridge, first thing he said was, hey, Maxwell, go down and see do a damage assessment. So I go down, and when I first went into the space, I was overcome by smoke. So this young guy grabbed me, pulled me out, gave me the proper equipment I need to put on. And then I actually climbed through the wall. On the seam of the wall was split open, and I climbed into the magazine to see if I could light out the sprinkler system or what have you. But once I stepped in there, I realized that whole area was gone. It was nothing. And now it dawned on me that I'm standing on about 1,200 pounds of explosives. And I just, at that point, kind of surrendered and said, well, God, I guess if this is where I'm supposed to go, you know, I guess I'm ready. You know, I guess there's nothing I could do. And so I didn't quit, but I just kind of said, well, I got to keep doing what I'm doing. And if this is the way I got to go, well, I'm done. Luckily it wasn't my time. And so I was able to get out of there and get back and give them the assessment. But I tell you, I couldn't talk about this for at least 4 or 5 years afterwards. I mean, every time I would start talking about it, I would just welt up and start crying. Four of my best friends were sucked out into the straits. So where I was sleeping at, had I been in my rack sleep, I would have been out in the ocean as well with them. So me and one other guy was fortunate. I was up on the bridge, and this other guy was in the chief's mess. Had he and I been there where the ship hit us, the metal just wrapped our bunks, right? So we would have been trapped inside of that compartment that was underwater. So we were just, I was like doubly blessed that afternoon, I guess, or that morning. I mean, because there was two shots that could have taken me out, and it just wasn't my time. But the navigator was killed, and four of my friends were sucked out into the straits. We're able to retrieve them. They're all, and it's funny because we're all very close friends to this day. But to have someone die, the guy that died was probably the best officer on board the ship that everyone loved. Just a great individual, a great human being. And, you know, it just changed my whole life. It changed my whole way of thinking about things, to have someone die close to you, to almost, you know, be a part of that demise, be a part of that experience. And then to live through it, you know, makes you question some things. And when you talk about trust, I was done with the Navy. I was done. I didn't trust anyone on board that ship. I didn't trust any leadership. I was done. And so they made us all go to psychiatrists. And I go to the psychiatrist, and this was over in Singapore. And the psychiatrist called me. He called me Mock, and he called me Max. Or, you know, he go, Mock? He go, what do you want me to tell your commanding officer? And I said, here's what I want you to tell him, that I'm unfit for duty, that I need to be discharged right away, and that my career is over. And he says, well, that's not what I'm going to tell him. I'm going to tell him that we need to get you back on the bridge immediately. I go, listen, buddy, I don't need the horse story. You know, when you get thrown off the horse, get back. I get it. I don't need that crap. I'm telling you, I'm done. And he goes, well, that's not what I'm going to recommend. And, of course, they put me back up there. And as we was pulling to Hawaii, we had almost a very similar situation happen. Scared me to death. But I got through it. And that was the closest that I've ever been in my life to death. And to see it right in front of you, was life-changing. And honestly, it was very life-changing. It gave me a whole different perspective on a lot of things. And I didn't take anything, and I don't take anything for granted to this day. And I know when I talk about we can't take anything personal, we can't, because we see it every day, especially in the military. Something happens to someone, the world doesn't stop. It keeps going. The bus don't even slow down. It keeps going. So you have to do the best you can with what you got and know that what you're doing is for the right reason and that you're happy. And if you're happy, that's all that matters. You know, that's all that really matters.
And if these are your ethics and your morals and you're standing by them, nothing really changes in how you approach life, does it?
It doesn't. It really doesn't. And you know what I found? That people will respect you 100 times more, because even when I was in the government, the word on the street was, if you're going to do something unethical, don't go and call Alan, because he's not going to be a part of it. So in itself, it eliminated a lot of nonsense coming my direction. Like, not going to dance with you, buddy. Sorry.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
And, you know, really, that's, once people understand that about you, they're going to treat you differently than they would treat the schmuck next door who's like, sure, I'm for sale. Tell me what you need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't suspect, and this is just me because I watch, I told you I'm a watcher, I'm a people watcher. I don't suspect mm-hmm. that people who are for sale, who have no real oral, you know, morals or ethics, are deeply respected by anyone, including themselves. And you know, Ellen, that's got to be a horrible way to live. It's got to be. You may get wealthy, you may, you know, have the best office, you're still a piece of crap, and you've got to know it.
I'm with you 100%. I'm 100% with you. I've always said something very similar, and that is, if you worship money, and I see this all the time in my industry, I mean, listen, I came from nothing. I honestly, I didn't realize how poor my family was until I joined the Navy. I mean, we were poor. We had nothing. But my parents, it wasn't about money. My father was a provider. He wasn't a very good father, but he was a provider. We never wanted for anything, but he wasn't there to give us that guidance, that parents, okay, fine. But I've seen in this industry where, you know, someone like myself come from humble beginnings, and all of a sudden, you have a lot of money and you have a lot of resources. And it's so easy to get caught up into I'm somebody. And no, and I believe that, and I'll tell this to anybody, if you will do one thing for a dollar, right? If a dollar can convince you to do one thing, there's absolutely no limits on what you would do for a dollar. And we see it around us all the time.
We do.
You know. Mm-hmm. And there are people that do some horrendous things for a dollar. And that's sad. It really is.
I know. I'm almost speechless here. This has been really an amazing conversation. And I wanted to kind of go a little bit further before I let you go. And thank you for staying mm-hmm. with me. Your email signature includes a very powerful quote, and it's, victories won by bullying and deceit leave a residue that is very different from victories won with integrity. And we're talking about that dollar again, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. We're talking about again, I could force you to do something against your will, and I could lie and bait you and get you down that path and promising all that stuff to you. But let me tell you, when it's over and done, the hatred that you have for me is so deep that you'll never get over it. You'll never get over it. But if I do something very kind with integrity, it uplifts you, you'll also remember that. And you'll also remember equally as deep, but in such a profound, happy way. But I think the difference is when you go down that hatred path, when someone does something wrong to you, you know, all it takes is just the mention of that, and you automatically go into a, you know, fortify, defend, protect mode. There's only been four people in my life that's ever took me to a point to where I call them dead, that they don't exist in my life. I could care less whatever happens to them. And if they call me up today, as a person would say, they could be standing next to me on fire, and all it would take is a drop of my urine to put them out, burn in hell, because I would not even sprinkle us nothing on them. Mm-hmm. Four people in my life, you know, that says life of all the people I've met. And these people were the ones that were deceitful. They had a black heart. They were just ugly people. And it's unfortunate that they're there and they're around us. But we have to know that's who it is. I talk about the executive officer, the executive officer and the admin officer are two of the people that's in my life that I don't wish them ill, but I don't wish them anything. I'm glad that I met them, and I'm glad that they took me through what they did, because that lesson that I received was unbelievable. I mean, that was so deep that if I see people like that, they'll never have a shot at me. They'll never have a chance to even get me in the crosshairs, because I'm gone. You know, be history. Yep. They were two people that had a black heart, and their intentions were not good. And they did everything they could to do me. They were so comfortable taking people down. And I've watched them, and I watched them destroy great people's careers. And they thought it was funny. They thought it was great. They was like, yeah, we got another one. I was like, oh my God, that is just evil. That's evil. So yeah, and just now, just talking about them, I get tough. You know, so.
And see, my stomach, I'm grabbing my stomach actually just listening to you. I mean,
yeah.
It's very powerful. But you're right. Listen, uh-huh. I had to learn the hard way that hatred, it's an energy, and it's a cruddy energy. So I don't give it to anyone. I just
exactly.
don't. I may dislike mm-hmm. you, but half mm-hmm. the time, more than half the time, if I really don't like you, and there's a few people that are just like, go away. They're evil, or they're just icky, or mm-hmm. I just don't like them for whatever reason. I don't even mm-hmm. try to be polite. They don't exist. I can look them.
Exactly.
Well, I don't look them in the eye. I look over their shoulder because they don't exist to me. Drives people crazy, mm-hmm. but if you don't exist, you don't mm-hmm. exist. But I had to mm-hmm. learn to my own detriment, because I was harming myself terribly, that hating someone was poisoning me. It was horrible.
Yes, you're so right. You're so right. Yep, you're so right. And that's why I'm 100% with you on that one as well. Exactly. You're letting them win when you hate them.
That's exactly right. Just don't give them any attention. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine, you may know who he is, his name is Larry Wingate, and he's written six New York Times bestsellers. You've probably seen him or heard him on TV, and he's just, he calls himself the pit bull of personal development. He will tell you where the corn grows. You're not going to get anything out of him that doesn't come straight from who he is. And one of the very first things he told me when one of our very first interviews was, and it's the title of a book, I think, What You Think of Me Is Really None of My Business. And we've been mm-hmm. kind of ringing around that a bit because, listen, I don't know what you think of me. I think, you know, we're getting along just fine. I know we are. But I have no real means of knowing what you think of me. I don't need to know. I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation with you. I hope we have more conversations. But it's really none of my business, is it?
Well, you know, I love to be around good people. I love to be around intellectuals. I love to be around folks that we could talk, and you appreciate my perspective. You don't have to agree with me, but at least appreciate it. And the same here, you know, because we do have different perspectives and we have gone down different paths in life. And so it's, for me, it's very exciting to hear some of your challenges. And so now I'll go like, well, you know, that's great, because that just proves to me that we're different. And it proves to me that because we're different, we can also be the same. And all we have to do is respect each other. All I have to do is just appreciate the fact that you had challenges that you overcame. I had challenges that I had to overcome. And I know you talked about your divorce a little bit, but when I went through mine, it was interesting. It was a good experience. It was, it's funny, my wife doesn't know this today, but my ex-wife contacted me and we talked, you know, and I'm like, okay, cool. But thank you for your life. I'm glad that we divorced. I'm glad that I'm not part of your life. I'm glad we have nothing to do with each other. And that's not a negative thing. That just, I'm just happy that it didn't work out for us, because it wasn't meant to be.
And right, different paths. Because, yeah,
right,
exactly.
You know, my wife said something to me just as we were getting married. She said, the reason why you and your ex-wife didn't work out is because you guys were different. And I said to her, I said, well, you know, I'm not better than anybody. She goes, no, it's not about better or worse. It's about different. And she said, because of the differences, you guys would have never, ever, ever come together, because you're so different. And I had to think about that. And well, she's 100% right. And so we fast forward, and I talked to her, and I went, oh, boy, she was 1,000% right. Because the lifestyle this person lived and where she's at in life was nowhere close to where I wanted to be at. Nowhere, and had I been with her, guess what? I'd be drugged into whatever life she's in. I'm like,
yeah.
Thank you. So, but, you know, it's good that she's doing what she's doing, and it's good that I'm doing what I'm doing. And, again, I don't wish any illness or any bad thoughts, but we're different. Now I know. And
yeah,
we'll
thanks
on.
For the experience, and keep on going.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Oh, I understand.
Exactly.
I do understand.
Yeah.
You are a fascinating man. I suspect we're more alike than we are different, to be honest.
Oh, I think we are, too. I think we are, too. And that's a good thing. And, again, I love having good conversations like this. I love having just open and frank and just respecting, you know, people for who they are and appreciating people for who they are. And I love the no judgment. I love the fact that, again, I can't control what people think of me. I can't control, you know, anything that anyone thinks of me. So
I don't even try.
I just have to do my best. Exactly.
When I gave that up, you know, it was like, oh, mm-hmm. my gosh. I felt like, wow. I literally, mm-hmm. when I decided, because I always was kind of that way. You know, I've always been mm-hmm. one of those people. I'm quiet. I'm off by myself. I'm a loner. You know, I'm not ignoring people. I'm already in my head, and my head is fascinating. I'm telling you, it's fun
right,
in there.
Right.
So I'm
right.
probably not paying a whole heck of a lot of attention to what you're thinking or doing unless it directly impacts me. So I always kind mm-hmm. of had that attitude. But when Larry Wingate said that to me, I went, oh, he just described how I've lived my whole life. But then mm-hmm. I had to go and give up some genuine hatred I was carrying around, and anger and angst. Oh. It was killing me.
So
it was physically harming me.
My wife, I'm saying, this is why I love this woman so much, because we're so different, and she says these things sometimes. I don't know if she even realized how profound some of the things she says that she does say, but when she says them, they always knock me off my feet. So this guy that screwed me over to $67 million, he's part of the four, right, that I mentioned. But
I would think
I had such distaste for him. I mean, I just couldn't even stand to be in his presence or even have a conversation about him. And so one day my wife said to me, now this guy, the same guy, mind you, church that I'm a deacon in today, that I am favored amongst lots, folks and all that stuff. But my wife said to me one day, she goes, you know, she calls me Maxwell. She goes, you know, Maxwell. She goes, you know, you really hate Clarence. And you really, really got an issue with him. She goes, but have you ever thought that he was put in your life to bring you to church and not to be your friend?
Oh.
And I had to stop, and I went, wow. I didn't see that coming. But when she told me that, oh, my God, you're talking about releasing a lot of disdainment and all that. I mean, it was like I was freed. It was like, you're right. He doesn't even exist. He served his purpose in my life, and that was all he was meant to do. Thank
I'll be
you.
Darned.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah. I think if we were to take the time and discover the source of our angst, sometimes it's sitting right in front of us. We can't miss it. But if we can mm-hmm. breathe a bit, walk back a little bit and say, okay, this wasn't the sole thing that happened. There were, again, let's go back to that door. There were steps. There were decisions mm-hmm. made that brought me to this. Where was I responsible? Where was he responsible? What did I miss? What good happened mm-hmm. from this? And then you can kind of rework it, reframe it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to be upset about. Nothing. Certainly don't walk away feeling that anyone's a failure. It was one of these things in life that's a part of your journey. That's a part of how you need to. I always look at it like this. Things like that happen because either you're going down the course that you didn't belong on, and this was a correction. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or it happened to make you aware of something that you're totally unaware of. But you had to know this. And however the delivery was, maybe that might have been uncomfortable, but you needed that package. You know what I mean? It had to be delivered to you. And that's the way I look at life. I'm like, I don't look at things as, oh, poor me. No, I'm thinking that, okay, well, you know, it had to happen this way. Oh, and before I forget, I got to say this to you. That whole collision at sea thing, oh, my God. When you talk about a story unfolding, that collision happened the day we left San Diego. 4 months later was the execution of it or the fruition of it. But it happened 4 months earlier, and it had to play out. And when I sit back and I think about the story and the things that happened along the way, oh, my goodness, that in itself, I mean, I could take just that section alone and write a whole nother book on how life is and how things happen in our life. Anything could have changed, but it didn't. I mean, there were things like we had a couple of near-miss collisions. We had the breakdown of communications between the commanding officer and the department heads. You had little fiefdoms being built on the ship that the commanding officer was unaware of. You had equipment that was, you know, high-value equipment that was missing that was never reported. So there was a series of things that happened that built up. And the collision was the climax of the whole event. It was unbelievable. And when I thought about that, it just put cold chills down my spine, saying, wow, the navigator, to the point where the navigator that particular night was sleeping inverted in his bed. Had he been sleeping properly in his bed, he would only receive scratches on his feet, maybe. But where he was at, the I-beam that was over his head came down just enough to crush his skull and break his neck and killed him instantly. Nothing else in that room was disturbed. When you walked in that room, had you not known what happened, you'd have never readily picked out where the incident happened. I mean, down to the T, that just blew my mind. I was like, well, this was a story that had to unfold in a manner in which it unfolded. The navigator had to die. His name was Sean McPhee. So Sean was a 23, 24-year-old man. This was the way he had to die. This was the story around it that caused that. And no one else out of the 300-something people on that ship, no one else died. People got hurt, but no one else died. And for him to die in the manner in which he did was just unbelievable. It's like, how is that possible? Unbelievable. That in itself was mind-blowing. That was one of the reasons why I couldn't talk about it for, like I said, 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 years, because when I sit and thought about that story and all the events that happened that led up to it would just make me just, oh man, it would just mess me up. So I had to get that out.
No, I'm actually going to put you on the spot a bit here, and I'll apologize.
Okay. No worries.
Mostly wholeheartedly, maybe not, because I do. Mm-hmm. What... You're going to write a book about this?
Oh, I don't know. I'm saying I could write a book about this. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
would you be willing to come back and talk about that on this show? Because it's important.
I would love to talk about just that. I can do it now easily because that was, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years
right,
ago.
Right.
But I remember it like it's yesterday. And I'm a member. It's still a group of us that were on that ship. We still... every year having a little anniversary get to get together, one of the guys in our group, who would have, of all the guys that were there, everyone was able to live a normal life, you know, have family, have children, and continue on, except this one guy who didn't get thrown out into the ocean, but he held on to a piece of metal on the side of the ship until he was rescued. But his life was never the same after that. I mean, to the point to where he relived this thing every day. He was on Facebook and he posted if it happened yesterday. His marriage failed. His kids bailed out on him. I mean, he ended up buying a motorhome and two dogs, and he just traveled around by himself. I mean, it just messed him up really bad, which is a testament of how we handle tragedies in our life. You know, some people can deal with it. Others just destroy. You know, and I don't think it makes anyone better or worse. It's just how we handle things in our life.
Well, and again, those doors, those steps, if you would, and I think it does have a very strong business connotation. This is a business podcast, but I think mm-hmm. the story, I think I would love for you to share it with my audience. I think it's an incredible story that should be shared with the world.
Matter of fact, when I wrote my book, some of the guys says, the guys that I know, did you write about the Kincaid? Did you write about the Kincaid? I go, of course I did. They're like, okay. Because they know this is an experience, that the folks that were involved, it was life-changing. It was life-changing. And it affected each one of us differently. Again, we're still in communications right now. For me, it just made me understand that, number one, nothing's guaranteed, nothing's owed. So if you're going to get it, you got to go out there and get it. Again, you can't take anything personal. You can't sit around and sit on the pity pot, as I call it. You can't be the victim. You know, nobody cares. They really don't. And it's not that they don't care about you. It's just because they have their own problems to worry about. They can't be sitting around worrying about your problems. You got to man up or a woman up or whatever up you got to do, but you got to be responsible to yourself on everything you do. And you have to be able to accept whatever the consequences are or the benefits. So,
and you really can't.
You make a decision.
Yeah, you can't be there for other people unless you're there for yourself. Took me a while to figure that one out, too.
Exactly. No, I think it's very important that we understand who we are, and I think that makes your life. And it's not about money, and it's not about stuff. It's about happiness. And I love the fact that you said, hey, I'm an introvert. I like being by myself, and I have a good time in my head by myself. That is beautiful. And that's strength. That's knowing that this is what it takes. I'm happy, and I'm okay with the decisions that I made. Yeah,
I actually find myself fascinating, truly.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff that I poke around and find in my brain, I'm like, ooh, where was that? Oh, that's pretty cool. Oh, what the heck were you thinking? You know, it's just, it's like I'm opening up boxes in the attic all the time. It's an amazing, for me, it's where I need to be. There's no question. Listen, I've kept you a half hour over, and I'm so glad you'll come over again. So thank you. But where can people find you before I let you go?
You can find me on alanmaxwellauthor.com. I think, and then for some reason, my Facebook was, I think after the election, it'll probably be turned back on. But right now, they won't let me on Facebook. I don't know why. But yeah, alanmaxwellauthor.com. Certainly one place. And then my email address is alan.maxwell@omni2max.com. Love to be on your show. This has been a pleasure. I really enjoy talking with you. I love talking. Life is good.
This is a fascinating conversation. I'm still clutching my stomach. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I think it's a good thing.
Oh, good. Listen, it has been really wonderful speaking with you, and I thank you for all of the wonderful stories and the tips and truly the big advice that you shared with our audience. So before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us on iTunes and honestly anywhere else you consume your business podcast. You can actually find us in Amazon Prime Music. I'm on Amazon. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
We are. So just look for your partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Thank you from the bottom of my heart.
And I enjoyed it, and the feeling is mutual for sure. I look forward to it. Just let me know when you want me to come back, and I'm there.
get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.